This Week with Ann Carrick and Vincent Caprio. Brought to you by the Water Innovations Foundation, solving the world's water problems through technology. Learn more at waterinnovations.org.
Welcome back to This Week with Ann Carrick and Vincent Caprio, and we're both here in the studio tonight. And we're going to talk to Jason Alter. We're going to jump right in because we ran a little long there, but we were having a good conversation with Mustafa Analui. And Jason, thank you for being with us this evening.
Thank you very much, Anne. I appreciate being here.
You know, Jason, the first question I want to ask you, people say so-and-so's a biotech company, and so and people say so-and-so's a pharmaceutical company. Can you explain the difference between a biotech company and a pharmaceutical company?
In layman's terms.
Well, I would give you my opinion that a biotech company, or let me backtrack, a pharmaceutical company is in the traditional business of producing and testing and designing and producing compounds that can help ameliorate or improve disease states for people. Biotech companies tend to produce new drugs, new technologies to also improve the human condition, but they tend to take a lot of new technology to do that, although it's a lot of blurring of the line these days as pharmaceutical companies use a lot of the same approaches that biotech do, and in the past have actually acquired a number of biotech companies to quickly get into that business.
And in your case at Orion Biosciences, which one would you classify yourself as?
Well, we generally refer to ourselves as a life science company, but we're within the life science umbrella, we're really a biotech company. In fact, we're the largest biotech company in Yonkers, New York, because we're the only biotech company in Yonkers.
Well, it makes it easy to be the largest, I guess.
Correct.
Now, I know in talking to you ahead of time that right now, at least, Orion has sort of focused on prostate cancer as the thing that you're going after to try to figure out how severe the disease is in each individual. In other words, to determine, you know, like how much it's going to affect that particular person once they've been diagnosed as having the cancer, correct?
Yes, that is correct. And I think the important thing for all the listeners is that, you know, most men today are newly diagnosed or caught early in the disease process with prostate cancer because PSA screening tends to catch the disease early, and men who are going on annual screening, getting a PSA test every year, are getting the disease caught early. The challenge for these men is that all of the disease state we're catching in prostate cancer is considered early disease. And so we've moved the diagnosis of prostate cancer up, but now we're challenged with trying to determine which prostate cancer is really aggressive and which prostate cancer you would normally die from something else without even knowing that you had prostate cancer.
Now, there's two methods of treatment. What are the two current methods of treatment?
Well, there are actually a multitude of methods. The two major treatment methods are external beam radiation and surgery. Many people are now going for robotic surgery where the surgeon controls a robot to remove the prostate. But there are also cryotherapy, which freezes the prostate, brachytherapy, which is radioactive seed implantation, and a host of other treatments.
Well, and how do you determine, like, from your standpoint, where you're trying to figure out how severe, like, what the severity level is of the disease in somebody, you know, when you have a cancer, it doesn't necessarily act the same in each person. And so how do you determine that whether this person, like, their body is just better at fighting it, or do they have a less severe case of it? I mean, how do you differentiate between those two kinds of things?
To summarize very quickly, today, most people are diagnosed and their disease severity assessed by the PSA, and most PSAs, as I said, are caught very, very low, usually about 4.5 or under 10 nanograms per mil. Also something called the Gleason score, which is the pathologist's interpretation of the disease state. And the vast majority of newly diagnosed men have either a Gleason 6 or a Gleason 7, what are considered low or intermediate types of disease states. And what we do is very advanced technologically. Your previous guest was talking about lab on a chip. In a sense, what we've done is we have lab on a piece of tissue, because we take the actual biopsy specimen that was collected from the diagnosis for a gentleman, and we actually analyze the biomarkers in the tissue to provide a personalized profile of their risk, and it's based on their particular tissue sample. So we are taking the analysis and the ability to project what their disease state will be up to 8 years in the future using their actual tissue.
So you're taking into account then how well their body would fight that cancer, because that's going to show up in your analysis, correct?
Well, I don't know that I want to say that, because there's multiple, you can't exactly say for sure all the underlying mechanisms of why some people respond well and why others don't. But the net is that the way we have designed our test, we've based it on over 1,027 patients where their outcomes are known. And we have validated on patients where their outcomes are known. And at the end of the day, what it means is that we can predict with a high degree of reliability, not 100%, but with a higher degree of reliability than what's available today, if you choose to have surgery, for example, what your likelihood is of having the cancer come back after surgery, and how severe that cancer would be if it did come back. And right now, in prostate cancer, as we discussed earlier today, one of the biggest things that men and their loved ones need when they go in when they're newly diagnosed is as much information as possible to make the right treatment decision, because there are a number of decisions and treatment options, and there are a number of different ways that a patient can go. And we're providing more information at that critical time when a patient needs to make that decision.
Yeah, that's true. Now, I'm over 50 and I've known a number of men that were faced with that decision, and they have three or four options, and it's very hard to decide. So you're going to help people have a better roadmap for their decision.
Yes, because what we can provide is a better understanding if you go one particular modality, how effective that treatment would be, in effect surgery. And then different doctors use this information for different modalities depending on how they practice. But what we're providing is a much more nuanced and deeper discrimination of risk than you can currently get today.
Well, and as you said, there's some people where, you know, if they had never had the PSA test, they probably would have gone their whole life, never known they even had prostate cancer. It wouldn't have bothered them. You know, in other words, they would have died of natural causes before it would ever have been a problem.
Yes, exactly.
And so in those cases, the person could, in theory, choose to do nothing.
And many do. That's called active. So it's not nothing, but it's actually the surgeon or the doctor is actively watching the patient on a very regular basis to see that their disease state doesn't change.
Correct.
That's about, of the 200,000 newly diagnosed men every year, about 8% choose active surveillance at the moment. But, you know, this is an example of the technology that you're talking about in healthcare that is providing. This is one of those technological advances that's only possible, I believe, in the United States. We have a number of patents over this work, and the kinds of analysis we do are only available, I think, in a society where new technology can be introduced into medicine. This is the newest development in prognostic medicine for prostate cancer that's been around since the PSA test was developed and released in the early 90s.
Now, of the four options, which is the most expensive and which is the least?
Well, you know, you're talking about the treatment options?
Yes.
I think that, and I'm not an expert on the different pricing, but I think you'd find that radiation therapy is one of the more expensive ones.
Is that with the seated?
No, the external beam radiation.
Oh, okay.
Where they use a unit outside the body to project a beam of radiation into the body.
Now, my father had that done, and he was 78, mm-hmm. and it was 3,000 times 30. It was $90,000.
I mean, each treatment was 3,000. He had 90.
He had 30
treatments.
Treatments,
yeah.
It was $90,000. And obviously, he had supplemental insurance. It was 100% paid, but it was $90,000, 3,000 each.
Right. There are different therapies with different price tags. And, you know, it's also really about the quality of life and the health conditions of the patient. So every patient has potentially a number of other health-related issues. And so part of the decision-making process is, how aggressive do I think my disease is? How old am I? What are the other health conditions that I have? Because prostate cancer mostly affects, not always, but mostly affects older men. And these are all the things that they have to take into account as they make a decision about which treatment option's really right.
And the older you get, the truer that would be with any disease.
Right.
I mean, my grandfather was 2 months shy of 98 and had pneumonia. When they did a chest x-ray, they thought they saw the beginning of lung cancer, and they said, but you know what? We're going to ignore it because the man's 98. You know, it's a little tiny spot. The cancer is never going to grow fast enough, you know, when somebody's 98 to beat him. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it definitely depends. We only have about 2 minutes left. So, you know, I'm assuming that you all focused on prostate cancer, one, because it's relatively common. But this is this whole idea of a very individual specific analysis is something that in theory can be replicated for other diseases beyond prostate cancer in the future, correct?
Yes, in fact, we'll be coming out with another test probably within the next year or two for another tumor type. The platform that we use that examines biopsy material is applicable to all solid organ tumor types, and we've published a number of peer-reviewed studies in breast cancer and other types of cancer. So yes, we can do that. We started with prostate cancer, though, for just two reasons. One, it is a large market. But second, it's really where there's a significant need. Unlike breast cancer, which has strong, not a lot of money comparatively spent on prostate cancer research compared, for instance, to breast cancer and HIV. And so this is an area which has large unmet need for men diagnosed with prostate cancer. And as I said, it's one of the newest, it's one of the real advances in prostate cancer, one of the latest advances in quite some time.
Okay, and on that point, we're going to let you go because we are out of time. Jason, hang on the line for us. Thanks so much for being with us, and we'll be back next week to talk about top stories of 2010 to wrap up our year.
And I already have my list done.
Me too. So I hope you have your list done. We want to hear what it is. We'll see you next week right here on This Week. Have a great evening.